Celebrating 30 years of broadcast excellence. Now back to the Evening Rush with Earl Ingram on 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
All right, Milwaukee, welcome back to a Wednesday edition of the Evening Rush, and I'm honored again to have Sheriff Clark in studio. He is a gentleman, and regardless of what anybody says, Sheriff Clark is willing to take on all issues. And he's certainly willing. He doesn't run and hide. He's willing to tell it like it is, and got to respect the man for that.
Thank you, Earl.
Yeah.
It's public service. It's a privilege to serve. As I indicated, I've been given the opportunity, because it's not a right to serve. It's a privilege for 30 years to serve this community, to make it a better place. And the position I'm in now allows me to be out front on some of these issues. And I'm not here to tell people what I think they want to hear. I'm here to tell them what I think they need to know. And I said, I think they need to know. I don't like to tell people you need to know, but what I think they need to know so that they can make an informed decision. I'm not here to get everybody to agree with me. Like I said, there's two schools of thoughts of to many of these issues. There's no right or wrong.
And usually you and I are on opposing.
Well, that's quite all right, though.
I know.
But a couple things that Ron talked about the last caller. First of all, Ron, my condolences, and I did extend them to Emma and Eddie Mathis. I lost a sergeant this week, 41 years of age, taken quickly from us, died of a massive heart attack, 41 years old, which it's a reality check. As you indicated during the break, every day is a blessing, every minute of every day is a blessing. And that's what we have to think about and not get too wound up in what we do and our careers and all this, because in the end, it's right. None of that stuff really matters. But Ron mentioned about the system and its flaws, and I agree. You'll never get an argument from me about our criminal justice system having flaws. It is a flawed system, but it's the only one we have, and it's an imperfect system. It's an imperfect world. Humans are imperfect, so humans run it, and the system's going to be imperfect. But like I said, it's the only one we have. It does need to get better. Hopefully the people, you know, like myself, it's one of my responsibilities to try to make this thing better. He mentioned a situation where someone throws some marijuana down, there's, you know, 10 young men around, they all get arrested. I'm not here to, you know, make excuses and say, no, that doesn't happen. And, you know, I understand all of that. But if you get arrested under that situation, if you're one of those 10 young men and you get arrested for that situation, first of all, you're not going to go to prison for it. But that should be a life-altering event. That should be a defining moment where you as the individual has to say, hey, man, I went to jail. I, you know, went down there. That's a bad place to be. I don't want to end up in here again. I don't want to continue to, you know, hang out with these rummies and get involved in this behavior because it's going nowhere. That's a decision that these young men can make early on, and they're not doing it. The people we're talking about are continually, you know, involved in this violent criminal behavior, and then they end up in prison, and someone's supposed to feel sorry for them. Their family will. Their family should. I'm not going to, because, like I said, I'm here to advocate for law-abiding citizens so that you and others in this community can live peacefully, relatively, in their neighborhoods. That's who I'm advocating for. And then Ron mentioned this, and it's important as well. And, Ron, I'm glad you brought this out about research and studies. You know, there's research on both sides of many of these issues. Some that say, yeah, this is true. Like, take global warming without getting into it. Some say, yes, it's real. Some studies say, no, it's not. It's just two schools of thought. But what I like to do is, and I'll read anybody that's got any studies that will show that letting violent criminals out of prison early is going to be helpful to communities. I want to read that. I haven't seen any. I will if someone can produce it.
Well, there won't be any resources.
Right. Right. And so all I'm doing is, and I'm not suggesting that this research put out by the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, that it's a truth. It's just, this is the data. That's all this study says is, we looked at the prison population. Here's what we found. It's not passing judgment. This is 94 been convicted. You can look at their rap sheet and see, yep, he's been convicted of a violent felony currently or sometime in his career. So all this is data to support a position, and I'm on a position that we shouldn't release these guys early, and this is my data to prove why. Those that think we should, like the governor didn't produce any data. He just said we're going to be able to save $27 million. That's not a good reason to let these individuals return back to terrorize our neighborhood. So he's going to have to show me, and some newspaper person should have done their job and said, governor, show me the data that shows that letting these guys out early is going to lead to lower crime rates, and these guys are all of a sudden
going to
turn their lives around.
Well, there's never going to be any data that's going to say that,
Sheriff. Right, but all this my research does, it doesn't say that this is the truth. It just supports the position I take that we shouldn't do this. Science does not prove. It only probes.
All right, Yolanda, you're next up. You have a question or comment for Sheriff Clark. You've waited for quite some time. Thank you very much for your patience.
Thank you. Well, you know, it's kind of like two sides to this. I'm actually a mother of a young lady that's incarcerated. I keep hearing you guys talk about young men. There are women there, young women that have left their children behind, and I have my granddaughter, and I'm in my early 50s, and it's quite hard for me as a grandmother to be raising a five-year-old. And then also, we get kinship fees from the state. That's more money coming to an individual to care. If someone has three, they would get that money for each child. So there's also other money being sent out from the state for incarcerated young women or young people that have children. Now, Judge, Sheriff Clark, I do agree with you. There are a lot of these people, young men, are to repeat offenders. And to catch them young would be a very big benefit before they go in. I actually have a brother that runs a mentoring program trying to catch young men when they're young and get them on the right track. But I guess my other end is me being a person that has a daughter, and my daughter's almost done two-thirds of her time. She's up for that, and I'm hoping she comes home because I have my own 10-year-old daughter I'm taking care of, and I'm ready to give her daughter back.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it goes on both ends. There are some of us parents out here, grandparents out here, that are being, you know, have to alter our lives because we don't want our grandchildren going to the system of foster care that could create possibly more criminals.
All right, Yolanda, thank you very much for the call. And, Sheriff, before you go there, she does bring about an interesting point, and I know it's something I've been talking about a lot here, and that is what these young ladies who are now, for the first time in numbers, in large enough numbers, that you see something is going on with young women in our community that has not happened to the degree that is happening now.
It's growing. It is a phenomenon that's being almost ignored by, social scientists. I'm a cop. I'm not a social scientist, but we are seeing more young women, we're talking, involved in criminal behavior, and violent criminal behavior is obviously disturbing. We need to get our arms around that now before it becomes what we're dealing with the black men.
I agree.
Okay, we don't want to be here 25 years from now talking about all these women in prison, and we need to let them out and so on and so forth. Yolanda, first of all, you have my sympathy. You are deserving of my sympathy, and I say deserving because, and first of all, I think it says a lot about your character that, you said you're 50 years old, now you have this five-year-old to raise, and that's why I said you have my sympathy only because, the joys of being a grandparent are probably great, but at the same time, you've done your job at parenting, and now here you have another
round. There's a lot of it in our community, though, sir.
The key, I think, you said your daughter is due to get out soon, and the key is, to make sure she stays out. So, and that's why I chuckled before, not that your situation's funny, but you said, I want to give her child back, and that's why I chuckled. I feel for you for that. But the key is to keep your daughter. What are we going to do? What are you going to do? And it's not your responsibility per se, I mean, because your daughter's an adult, but you're still, her mother, and you feel a sense of responsibility there. But can we keep her from returning to the prison system, get her on the right path so that, she can become the parent that she's supposed to be? She had a child. It's not about your daughter anymore. It's about her child. And your daughter has to think that way, that it's not about me and my selfish ways. I got to raise my kid so my kid doesn't end up like I do. But there's another issue here that I think gets left out. The behavior of some of our young people, not all, but some, and even some of our adults, the behavior they engage in, the decisions they make, we've overcome a lot, our people. In the United States, we've overcome slavery, we've overcome discrimination, we've overcome Jim Crow. And still have a long way to go in those areas. I'm not suggesting discrimination's over. Yeah, it's here today. It still exists. But we've overcome a lot of that stuff. And for someone to now convince me that we can't overcome unemployment is kind of, you know, startling to me in light of what we as a people have been able to overcome. We're in a deep recession right now, deep unemployment. But we've overcome more than this, and our people are better than this. We're capable of better decisions. We're capable of more. We're capable of staying in school. We're capable of taking education seriously. We're capable of being good parents. I had good parents. You had good parents. Right. You're a good parent. We're capable of all of this stuff. Our young people really are the product of our own neglect. We can blame society all we want. But we have to expect more of ourselves. Sure, we can look at the government, we can look at the prison and say, well, it's unfair, the criminal justice system. I know that. But how come we're not doing collectively? I'm not passing judgment on anybody here, but collectively, why aren't we demanding more from our young people? Better decisions, better lifestyle choices. Shame on some of the stuff that, you know, early on when they get involved. When we expect more from our young people, Earl, they'll give us more, and you know that. You're working with young people all the time.
There's no doubt about that. Kathy, you got the last word with Sheriff Clark on this. Thank you very much for waiting. Kathy, you have a question or comment? All right. Kathy's gone. But, Sheriff, we got a few minutes left before we go to the break, and you have to leave. What are the plans? I know the summer's right around the corner. You got your hands full with what's going on over at the House of Correction. Now you've got to start preparing for the summer initiative. What's the plan right now? You certainly don't have the amount of manpower that you've had over the last, let's say 10 years ago. There were a lot more deputies available than what you have now. Are you stretching things a little bit too thin with all the areas that you're trying to cover?
Well, we're asking for more. When I say asking for more productivity from people. It's about getting more value. It's not always about having more resources. It's being more determined to get more done with what you have. Sitting around and lamenting and feeling sorry for myself because I don't have all the resources that previous sheriffs had and that we used to have just isn't going to solve any problems. I block. I'm human. Sometimes I slip into these conditions myself, self-pity. We all do it. But I try to catch myself really and say, hey, David, wait a minute. You're living a blessed life. You're doing what you love doing. You've been given the opportunity to reach the top of your profession, the pinnacle of your profession. What are you feeling down about? So that kind of re-energizes me. The House of Correction is a huge undertaking right now, and it's going to take several years to turn that thing around, and we are going to turn it around, but a culture change takes a long time.
But how much of your energy is taken away from other areas in dealing with the House of Correction? I know that's a major issue that you're dealing
with.
Yeah,
it is monopolizing most of my time and focus now, but I can't allow my eye off the rest of the organization. We're big. You know, we got the patrol operation, the freeway, we have the courts, we have the airport, we have criminal investigations, and then, you know, you throw this on top of it. But I accepted this challenge, and it's a huge challenge, knowing that I could make a difference with what's going on down in Franklin. And then you mentioned we have the summer coming up. We have our parks initiative. We have been working over the winter. We plan ahead. We've been working on our summer plan over the winter for improved safety in the parks so people can enjoy that public space, the lakefront. We don't just roll out what we did last year. We look at what happened as a result of our efforts. Where can we enhance public safety in these areas? Where can we do things differently? How can we stretch these dollars a little further? Because I didn't get more people. But I have a lot of people in this organization that are committed to what we're doing. They're committed professionals. They're the ones that are getting it done. My hat is off to them, and they're the ones that. You know, I pass on the comments when people say, hey, Sheriff, you're doing a great job. If it wasn't for the people I have, like Scott Mathis, unfortunately I lost him, we wouldn't be as successful as we have been. So we just keep at it, Earl. This is never ending. There's no finish line to this. You never get to, and I'll never get to a day where I look and say, oh, everything's taken care of, and now we can do the backstroke. not in public service. It's not going to be that way. I like a challenge. I like a mountain out in front of me so that I can try to figure out how to get over it, around it, through it, whatever I have to do to get by it, to get to my goal. And that's a better county, a safer county, not for me, but for the people who live and work.
You know, I remember when you first came on board, the main topic at that point in time was changing the culture of the Sheriff's Department. Have you done that?
We have been extremely successful in that. And the culture, when we say that, and you know this, but for your listeners, we're talking about behavior. Culture is the way people behave, and we wanted to change the way people behave so that this organization better meets the needs of the people that we're supposed to serve. It's about customer satisfaction. It's about making people more safe and creating an environment of safety, getting rid of that fear that permeates many of our neighborhoods. We're on the way. We have become more efficient. I've had 6 consecutive balanced budgets since I've become sheriff, and before that, that was unheard of. We were running multi-million-dollar deficits, so that lets me know we're more efficient in what we're doing. And so we're wiser with the way we're putting these resources out there, and that's why we're more effective without having more personnel. But the culture change is always ongoing, because if you don't watch it, as you know, human beings be what they are, they will slide back into the old ways and the way things used to be. Because as human beings, and we're all like this, we like comfort levels. But my job is to keep my finger on the pulse of things so that we don't start to slip into these comfort zones, become complacent, slide back, and all of a sudden it's no longer about the people we serve, but it becomes about us. And that's the organization I came into. This was all about everybody inside, and I flipped that around, that paradigm, and said, no, this isn't about us. It's about them. And I pointed to the external environment, the people who count on us, you know, to get this job done. So, you know, I'm here to say thanks to the people in this organization as well. And if it wasn't for them, we couldn't have got this done.
So, and as you came in, your job was never to be liked or admired by your deputies. It was, in fact, to be respected.
It's right. It's never been on my priority list to be liked. I tell people every day, Kim can attest to this, when I want to be loved and pampered and consoled, I go home to my wife. Okay, and it's true. It you know, we're talking about leadership is what you're really talking about, and leadership is not a popularity contest. You can't worry about that. You have to do what you feel in your mind is the best thing to do for the people that we serve, the organization, and then the employees third. And it will always be that way in that order: citizens first, organization second, employees third. And anytime you make a decision, someone's not going to be happy, no matter what it is. I mean, look at our president today. No matter what you do, when you make a decision, someone's not going to be happy. So you can't worry about that. Do what you feel and what you know, in your gut, you know is the best thing to do for the organization. And stay focused. Sometimes you're going to be wrong. It's not about being right. It's feeling that I think this
Nobody
is the best,
all the answers.
In the best interest of the organization right now. And then a lot of that other stuff, you got to kind of block it out. I know I have my detractors. And
well, what leader doesn't? I mean, I don't care on what level.
Well, as you know, they say to avoid criticism, do nothing, say nothing, and be nothing. Then you won't get criticized, and that's not in my DNA.
All right, I want to thank you very much for coming in, Sheriff Clark.
You're welcome, Earl.
As always, you're very open and honest and candid about any and everything, and I'm thankful because anytime I've ever asked you to come in, you've taken the time out to talk to the community, and I don't think anybody can ask any more than that.
No, I appreciate it.
And Kim, thank you very much for lining the sheriff up for us, and Sheriff Clark, we're going to make sure we do it again, especially as we get closer to the summer, and you taking the time out of your busy schedule to spend with the community is what it's all about.
It's part of my job.
All right. Thanks again.
All right.
All right. When we come back, we'll be discussing some other things. You're listening to 1290 WMCS, The Talk of the Town.
This portion of the Evening Rush is being brought to you by Wendy's. Wendy's, eat great, even late. It's way better than fast food. it's Wendy's. And parents, if your son or daughter is a high school senior planning to attend a college or university in the fall, please make sure they apply for a Willie D. Davis Scholarship. This year, 25 students will receive $2,000 each. So log on to 1290WMCS.com to download your applications today. Or you can stop by our studios. We're located at 4222 West Capitol Drive, Monday through Friday between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. All applications must be submitted no later than March 30th, 2009.
Celebrating 30 years of broadcast excellence. Now back to the Evening Rush with Earl Ingram on 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
All right, Milwaukee, welcome back to the last half hour of the Evening Rush. And I got to tell you, say what you will about Sheriff Clark. He is certainly one of the most, you know, choose my words carefully, approachable elected officials or leaders in our community. He certainly is a guy who's not going to run away from controversy, and he's certainly going to speak from his platform what he really believes. He's certainly not going to create or develop something that that's not in his heart. So say what you will about Sheriff Clark, he's always going to be a person that you can reach, and that's a good thing, and that's a good sign. But our phone lines are open at 799-1290 if you have a question or comment about the conversation we just had with Sheriff Clark. If not, we'll move on. We'll move forward. Talking about the issues in the prison system and Governor Doyle and his plans, here's a different perspective on that, and it's from Charles Franklin, the University of Wisconsin-Madison political scientist, and Doyle's, who said, Doyle's proposal is politically risky, noting that Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis in 1988's presidential campaign was torpedoed in part by a prison furlough program. The changes could be grounded in solid corrections policy, but Doyle's political career could end if one released inmate commits a heinous crime, he said. Representative Mark Pocan, a Democrat from Madison, co-chairman of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, said he had not yet studied Doyle's proposal, but that he wanted to make the corrections policy smart rather than just tough. When you start spending $30,000 a year and you're competing with an Ivy League education price, it doesn't make a lot of sense, he said. Senator Lena Taylor, Democrat Milwaukee, who sits on the committee, embraced Doyle's plan. If we continue spending in the way we are, that is not effective, she said. But Representative Mark Gundrum, Republican from New Berlin, said state government cannot waver from preserving public safety. There are thousands of places in the budget where you could be cutting and should be cutting before you release dangerous offenders back on the street, he said. In another budget provision, Doyle wants to change how the state monitors some sex offenders with devices linked to global positioning satellites. To save money, Doyle wants to change the law so information on lower-risk offenders is sent from the devices to the department once a day instead of continuously in real time. But Ramesh, the corrections secretary, said in coming years, the department will have to monitor thousands of offenders with devices. Without changes, costs will explode, he said. Our phone lines again are open at 799-1290. The sheriff talked about his plan and how his response to the overburdened penal system and the taxpayers who continue to pay an inordinate amount to keep people locked up. The sheriff's response is, if we privatize the prisons, that obviously the costs are going to come down because businesses will be forced to run them like a business, and the bottom line will be businesses are in business to make money. Therefore, if it's a private entity, certainly they're not going to have to be paying the wages that right now governmental bodies pay. And I know that's not a popular thing to say, and there are many other county and state and federal-run facilities that have been privatized, and in many instances, to the detriment of those particular entities as well as to the people who worked in those various organizations. So I understand where the sheriff is coming from. It is an issue that is going to certainly resonate as we move forward this summer and in the months to come. At some point in time, there's going to be a full-fledged debate on whether or not this is the right thing to do. The governor is willing to stake his entire career on the fact that we can no longer accommodate warehousing all these young men in prison. So I want to go back to what we were discussing earlier prior to Sheriff Clark coming in, and that was about what goes on, the conservative movement, and how somewhere along the line there are people who seem to think that people want to not work and people are predisposed to think that I'm going to go through life without a job. And where that idea comes from, I really don't know. I've talked with so many people over the years, and I'm out in the community all the time, and I'm talking with young people, and I'm talking with young men, and they're discouraged because they can't find or can't seek employment. And it is heartbreaking. When you look around and see what America has wrought, and you see what America has been, and everywhere you look, there's plenty. And then you live in a community or you live in a city where you feel like you're left out. There's no way possible. Imagine, if you will, and I've always said this, imagine, if you will, never getting a paycheck with your name on it. I can't begin to imagine what would be going through my head if I was an adult male or an adult female, and I never, ever, not once a week, not once every 2 weeks, not once a month, that there's never a paycheck with my name on it. Imagine the stress that people go through, and then multiply that by the numbers of people who find themselves in those kind of situations in our community and communities like ours all over the country. And then I think you'll get some kind of idea why there's so much anger. Now, as the sheriff said, that certainly doesn't give anybody pause or an excuse for somebody to take a gun and rob somebody on the street. Certainly you can't accept that and use that as an excuse for somebody doing those kind of things. But we certainly have to address the fact that there are no jobs in this community. And as long as there are no jobs, I maintain that we're going to continue to have crime as we see it today. Truck, you're first up. How you doing, sir? Thank you very much for waiting.
Hey, man, I'm just like you, brother. I need to know where my check coming from. I couldn't imagine it either.
But you know, all too often in our community, that's what you got.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, I'm out here with these kids every day. I'm a fortunate young man. At 38 years old, I have a full-time employment. I'm fortunate. Whoa, where am I?
Yeah, you know what? At 38 years old, to have full-time employment, for that to be an aberration tells us how serious this situation is. Because in my time, 38 years old, almost everybody who wanted a full-time job had one.
You said it, and my parents expected me to get a job. Now, the thing of it is, now I guess I got 2 points, my man. The first point, I got to say this. Those Republicans, I heard Paul earlier, and then I took a break because you had Sheriff Clark on.
Right.
But for sure, they have been walking in the dark, assuming that they make six figures. Everybody doesn't make six figures. It's kind of like a privilege. They expect. I mean, I have come to the table sometime with a college degree and full background, and still I'm looked down upon. So a lot of those people in those Republican shoes, at least the old part of the Republicans, because they're going to have to change, is that they expect. I mean, they feel as though they are better than everybody else. I mean, it's a coming-to-the-table thing, just because who I am, and this is what I am, and this is what I do. And now the pain has come home to rest. And, I mean, you're not really concerned about testicular cancer unless you get testicular cancer. Believe me, you out there all of a sudden raising money for that cancer. And now that the conservatives are suffering just as well as everyone else is, I mean, they got to face the fact. Those spaces at the car washes and at the fast food restaurants are changing. They're now different faces now working there for the money, because they have to make it.
You know, Chuck, all I can tell you is to steal a line from Rush Limbaugh's listeners, ditto.
Here's
the reality of it, man. Again, I'm not talking about a person who has not listened to conservative talk, be it television or radio, for a number of years. I've spent an awful lot of, actually, some would say an inordinate amount of time,
right,
listening to conservative and radio as well as television, and especially the cable channels. And I think we do ourselves a disservice, because there are many of us who won't listen to that, because they'll say, I don't need to hear what they have to say. Well, I think you do need to hear exactly what's going on and what they have to say. Go ahead, sir.
I mean, I agree 100%, because I'm a fan of finding out what the other side has to say. You're right. I listen to Rush Limbaugh and Al Sharpton. I try to get a diverse angle on it.
Right.
Because I need to know where they're coming from.
You're correct.
I mean, and now the one thing that upsets me about it all is that most of those guys are unemployed now and hustling apple cart jobs, kind of like, you know, back in the Depression. now they're looking to sell apples, hustling on the street, selling merchandise and things like that. The face of the hustle man has changed because the times have changed.
Well, you know, people are going to have to figure out a way to create money and themselves. In this day and time, it's not going to be about wealth building as it was in the 1990s and the 2000s, where so much wealth was built through greed and through the conservatives' vision of America and tax cuts by George W. Bush and the whole nine yards and corporations and all of those things. Those times have since passed, and I can't begin to imagine it's going to be about survival. And so when it's about survival, people do a lot of things. The first law of nature is self-preservation, and you certainly don't want to ever get to that point with a city, with a community, or with a country.
That is correct.
But we're dangerously heading down that path. But Chuck, we got to run. Thank you very much for calling back, man, and thank you very much for listening. We got to go to a break. We'll continue the conversation on the other side. It is 5:38. You're listening to 1290 WMCS, The Talk of the Town.
These days, people have gotten pretty good at planning.
Celebrating 30 years of broadcast excellence, The Evening Rush on 1290 WMCS, The Talk of the Town.
All right, Milwaukee, welcome back to the last few minutes of a Wednesday edition of The Evening Rush. And now go directly back to the phone lines. Robert, how you doing, sir? You have a question or comment?
How you doing, Earl?
I'm doing fine.
Listen, there is something I do agree with you on. It's probably like one of the first times, but there aren't a lot of businesses here. But I'm going to tell you something. Businesses are going to set up where I think they feel comfortable, where, you know, if the place is attractive, they're going to set up there. Now, I've talked to a lot of businesses or people starting businesses, looking for places to start businesses. Milwaukee's not a very attractive place, they say, to a lot of them. You know, I mean, Dallas seems to come up a lot, you know, when I talk to a lot of people. But Milwaukee's just not an attractive place to a lot of people.
Based on what?
They just don't like the climate. They say they just don't like that climate. They don't think it's really that busy, whereas a Dallas, there are a lot of other businesses, and it's just the overall climate, the feel of it, versus Milwaukee. I've heard that from a few people.
You know, if that's the case, then the future for Milwaukee doesn't look very bright. And I don't think that Mayor Barrett would buy into that Milwaukee is not an attractive place. From what I often hear, Milwaukee has one key element that many other areas don't have, and that's the lake.
If I had my choice, I would take Dallas over Milwaukee.
Well, yeah, if I had my choice, there's some other things I would rather do too, but the bottom line is we're talking about whether or not businesses, why it's so difficult for businesses to relocate here. And your response is it's obviously something that many people aren't interested in coming to Milwaukee. You're saying mainly because of the cold. There are those who will
not
say...
Not just the cold, but, I mean, why aren't they flocking here?
Well, Well, again, you know, let's look at the totality of the situation, and let's again go back to at one point in time, Milwaukee was the industrial manufacturing capital almost of the world, and yeah, correct. But there had to be something that was attractive about Milwaukee back then for people to come here at that point in time. So
sure is it now?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm in agreement. I mean, from the standpoint, but I don't think weather's an issue. I know that I constantly hear people talking about crime. Crime is the main issue that prevents jobs from coming to the city. And I always have to question that again, because if there are jobs, if there are more jobs available, I think the crime will go down. But we can argue that. That's a cyclical argument. You can argue that until infinitum.
Right. Well, that's a catch-22 situation, but I do think crime has something to do with it, though, as well.
Well, you're entitled to your opinion. I really appreciate the call. Thank you very much, Robert. Tyrone, how you doing, sir?
Hey, Earl, and to the audience. I think, Earl, one of the things you mentioned was water. One of the advantages of what we have here is that as we see what happened in Atlanta, Southeast, and other parts of the country where they're having a problem with fresh water,
yes,
that is not a problem here, and that's going to be a continual problem for lots of places. That gives us one advantage. One disadvantage we have had, and I know I had a meeting maybe about a year ago with some people at Kohl's and some other places, I have a hard time recruiting African-American professionals to come here. That is not a secret, because the reputation around the country and the lack of sometimes upper mobility and other things, people have. Now, when people get here and they start to see the quality of life for their families and that, it's hard to get them to leave. But it's just the recruitment and the images that go out about Milwaukee, as you are talking about these number ones and these number twos and all these things we rank in. But when you talk about quality of life, we're doing okay. He said there's no end. I mean, Bucyrus Erie is the number one mining
in the world.
You got some of the meat packing plants that make meat and other products. So when somebody says we're not Miller Beer, Miller's not going nowhere. Why? Because that plant down there has an unlimited source of fresh water.
That's correct.
And compared to its other plants around the country where they don't have that as a normal way in which their cost of cleaning and getting water ready to go into beer is higher, Milwaukee actually is a great plant, and it'll be here a while. And they'll put a lot of money into it, because it definitely needs to be here where it can produce beer at an efficient cost for Miller Brewing Company. But Milwaukee has lots of assets. It's still working at, as you know, me and you talked about, it's like a big old small town in some ways. And so, but it's getting there. But it's always been, 10, 15 years behind where everybody else was at.
But you know, Tyrone, Milwaukee,
in terms of its cultural and also leadership, Milwaukee is a place where there aren't that many African Americans that lead anything.
You know, Tyrone, we're career Milwaukeeans, we saw when Milwaukee had an opportunity to expand and do some of the things that occurred in sister cities like Milwaukee, Kansas City, Cleveland, and those kind of cities that are comparable to Milwaukee. Milwaukee always wanted to remain a small town, big city.
But the classic case is the Brewers Stadium.
Yeah, they didn't want to put it downtown.
And to put that thing downtown, as it had happened in Cleveland, Cincinnati, other places.
Everywhere.
Where they put them downtown and started a renaissance of downtown. Well, that resistance was because of the rest of the state and the way it sees Milwaukee. They want people to get into the stadium and get out of Milwaukee as fast as they can, so therefore you didn't have to interact with its central city or central city residents the same way as the design of the freeway. So it always has had these kind of unique, I call it steering, that happens in terms of its overall design. But, I mean, in terms of raising a family, in terms of the quality of life, green space, you will not find a park system anywhere around the country that's anywhere as equal to what we have here. In terms of many of those things, you can't find four black newspapers and black radio. there's so many amenities here that sometimes you just have to sit back and thank God for what you do have, and then try, as you talk about a lot, try to figure out how I can enhance it and make it better, because it ain't always greener on the other side.
Hey, Tyrone.
We know that by the number of people who come back to Milwaukee and who have left.
And
you ask them why you come back.
And
there's something about Milwaukee that's unique.
And we still know that I recall when they built the 45-story First Wisconsin Center, and we rejoiced because we're going to finally get a skyline. And Milwaukee chose to leave it there. So, you know, that's Milwaukee.
Right.
You got to love it.
Ground,
yeah.
Access to the lake. You can't go to Chicago and access the lakefront like you do here because of just the way we designed and made our lakefront be accessible to the public and to many be drive up, park, and you can walk out to the lake. Well, you can't do that in everywhere. Yeah. So there are some unique components of Milwaukee that are very unique to it and make it the kind of city where one day it's going to break out of its shell. And one day it's going to be very inviting to everybody from anywhere. But right now, it's got some work to do on destroying those images about what it is and what we represent. And it's up to us, actually, to help destroy those images and to promote this place we call home.
All right, Tyrone. Thank you very much, man. Encouraging words. We got to run. Peter.
Thank you for taking my phone call. I think we do have a couple of situations that we have to look at. I do like the fact Tyrone talked about the lack of recruitment of black professionals and Latino professionals to Milwaukee. That is a big issue, and one of the things, I'm actually with an organization called the Black Data Processing Associates. It's a nationwide organization, and it's basically blacks in the IT field. And I actually, when I went to Atlanta this year for the conference, or last year for the conference, I asked people what their opinions of Milwaukee were. And a lot of them actually had negative opinions regarding the lack of knowing anybody that came from Milwaukee. The one person actually brought the UWM research that was done where black men in Milwaukee, he actually had an interview in Milwaukee, but he decided not to come here because he Googled a research and found that black men in Milwaukee with a college degree are paid less than white men with a high school education. You know, so recruitment tends to be, and then also the upward mobility aspect is a huge issue. There is a lack of blacks in any kind of leadership here. When you look at businesses, the number one reason why businesses don't come to Milwaukee, it's my opinion, and actually you can look at the Journal Sentinel article, I think yesterday, why IBM built in Iowa, of all places, instead of Milwaukee. Well, one, Milwaukee didn't even get into the bidding contest for IBM. But two, the other issue is there's a lack of professional talent here. We're not producing enough college graduates that stay in Wisconsin or stay in Milwaukee, and our high school education system or our elementary educational system is in trouble. Elementary and secondary education system is in trouble.
Hey, Peter.
Yes.
Thank you very much for that, man. We got to run. We're long, but thank you very much for the information. I want to thank again Sheriff Clark for coming in and spending some valuable time with us, and we'll certainly get him back again. Thank you very much, Kira, for taking the time out and directing and guiding me. And I want to again thank the community more than anything else, because without you, we couldn't exist. We couldn't do the things we do. So have a blessed evening for what's left of it. And coming up is going to be Blues After Dark with Phil Anderson.
That's right.
So y'all
Blues
keep listening.
All right.
Yeah, y'all keep listening, all right? All right, listen to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
The views and opinions expressed on The Evening Rush do not necessarily represent those of management or its advertisers. Please stay tuned for Blues After Dark with Phil Anderson.